Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Jesse was very smart, very knowledgeable. She liked to color. She loved to dance. She told me she wanted to be a ballerina when she grew up.
Hello, and welcome to the Vanished Podcast. If you have not listened to the first episode about Jesse Shockley, pause this now and go listen to that first. I will be picking up where I left off in the last episode. You've heard the closing arguments, and now you will hear the verdict. In this clip, you will hear someone start yelling, that is Jerise's mother.
On the charge of count two, first degree murder as follows. Guilty.
Oh, God!
As you heard in that clip, Jerise was found guilty of first-degree murder, and she was also found guilty of the child abuse charge. At sentencing, the family members who raised Jesse for most of her life got up to speak. Their testimony is gut-wrenching to listen to. It makes me cry every time I hear it. In these next few clips, the audio at times is not the best. When the one woman is crying, she breathes heavily into the microphone, which you can hear. Also, another microphone picked up someone pouring water. I do my best to clean up these clips, but some things you just can't remove.
Could you please state your name?
My name is Taquacy Aaron Aikens.
Go ahead.
We wrote a poem for Jesse. She cries and wonders why. Why does she have to miss school because of her blackened eyes? Why is mommy so mad? Why no matter how good she is, mommy always thinks she's bad? Why can't she ever hear praise no matter what she does? Why has she never felt her own mother's love? Why is the abuse so real? Why won't these scars heal? Why hasn't her face ever felt a gentle kiss? And why can't mommy use her words instead of her fists? Why can't she be as free as a butterfly? And why can't she have one day where she doesn't have to constantly cry or constantly ask why? On bent knees, she prays, having faith that soon God will send protection her way. We have a chance to protect a child who sheds silent tears, yet displays visible fears. When they become children with no choice, stand tall and open your heart and be that child's voice. Don't ever be afraid, or please don't wait, because for so many children, it becomes too late.
Thank you. Did you also want to say something?
No, I just want to be here.
Thank you. Say your name first, ma'am.
Ida Vance. I would like to start off by saying we love and we miss you, Jesse, and we wish you were here with us all. I'm sorry that you will never have the chance to grow up with your cousins and have the opportunity to experience life to the fullest, no birthdays to celebrate, no graduations to attend, no marriage, nor children to bear. I can honestly stand here today and say you were truly robbed at a young age of your life, and for that I am sorry from the bottom of my heart.
Take a breath.
And if I would have known what I know now to be the truth today, I would have done everything in my power to prevent your death. You didn't deserve to leave this earth in this manner, in the way that you did. Just know, while you were here on earth with us, you were very much loved by me, Victor, Jaslyn, Whitney, Nikita, Mahogany, Mia, Piat, Amaya, Jaden, Chunky, Lanaya, Jaleel, Jameer, and Tamori. But the most love of all, and still is today, is Auntie Tycora. She loved you more than life itself. You were truly a blessing to our family. You would truly be missed. We love you, Jesse. We love you. This is to this baby killer that's sitting behind me. Jerese Hunter, how dare you? How dare you? How dare you sit there, stone-faced it, and with no emotion, none, no emotion. Your baby is dead, and you don't got no emotion. From the day it happened until today, no emotion. But you loved your baby. You loved her. Yeah, right. Like I said, you sit there stone-faced and with no emotion, like you didn't do anything to baby Jesse. Baby Jesse. She was a baby. And just to let you know, I know that you've done this to her, and you know that you've done this to her. And you managed to pull the wool over all our eyes until you completed your task of killing baby Jesse. And to top it off, you thought you were actually going to get away with it. Ha! Guess what? The last laugh is on you. I hope you burn in hell for what you've done to baby Jesse and for the abuse and trauma that your other children have had to suffer and endure because of the bad choices that you chose to make in your life. I'm glad baby Jesse is up in heaven and she don't have to suffer and endure any more pain from you. And the funny thing is that I begged you to allow us to keep baby Jesse to stay with us until you got your life in order. My sister Tycora offered you to live at her house until you got up on your feet and at the same time build a relationship with your baby, because you went to prison for 4.5 years of her life. But this is the road that you chose to take instead of a mother and daughter bond relationship. And it's not like you didn't have choices, because you did. You just chose the wrong choice. And for that, you will pay this time for everything. Everything, Jerese. Everything, Reese. Everything. And you are no longer considered a part of my family, nor my cousin. I loved you. I loved you, girl. I loved you like my little sister. I took care of you like you was one of my children and your children before Jesse came along, and you know this. So how dare you? Like I said, I don't consider you a part of my family nor my cousin, and you will forever be known as a baby killer. You understand that word? A baby killer. And you are going to get what's coming to you. To you, the baby killer.
Next up was a detective who had worked on Jesse's case.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, it has been 3.5 years since the disappearance of 5-year-old Jesse Shockley. I'll always remember the day that she was reported missing and the investigation into her death, as it still haunts me to think about the pain and torture that she endured alone in the closet of her mother's bedroom. The actions as described by Jesse's sister, 13-year-old sister Janine Hunter, of her mother Jerese beating and locking poor Jesse in the closet, have completely impacted and changed my life. I cannot even begin to describe the feelings I have for her disappearance and the feelings I have for not finding her little body in the Butterfield landfill. As a homicide detective, I spent several years investigating these types of crimes. Homicide of any child is the hardest and most emotional crime to investigate. The pain and suffering that I observed in Jesse's family, friends, and even the community was difficult, to say the least, at times unbearable. I had hoped Jessie would be found to comfort the family and give her the proper burial she deserves. Hundreds of investigators and civilians were used to search for Jessie's, both in the neighborhood where she lived and in the Butterfield landfill. At the end of the landfill search, family members who raised Jessie came to say goodbye to her. During this time, a poem written by Peggy Grant was shared with me, which I'd like to read now. Please look into my eyes. Do you hear my laughter? I am beautiful, and as an innocent child now playing with the angels high above the clouds. I know who hurt me. She took my life away. And now I am silent, the words I cannot say. To live and to grow are no longer my choice, but you can give me justice if you just be my voice. Your Honor, Jerese Hunter has a history and conviction of violent child abuse against her, where she spent 4 years of her life for beating her children. This incarceration, though short for her crime, did not rehabilitate her. Your Honor, now is the time that the criminal justice system does what it is intended to do, keep the criminals locked up and the community safe. I could not bear the fact of this happening to another child should Jerese Hunter ever be released again. I realize that you have the final say on the sentence of Jerese Hunter. Considering the violent nature of this crime and the simple fact that Jerese Hunter hasn't learned from prior conviction, I ask that you sentence Jerese Hunter to the maximum sentence of life without parole. Thank you.
A few family members then got up in support of Jerese and asked for leniency. The prosecution was allowed to bring up the earlier abuse conviction during sentencing, and I believe that the prosecutor's sentence recommendation speech is very powerful.
And the reason the state included in my sentencing memorandum the facts about the defendant's prior conviction for child abuse is because the jury didn't have that information either. But it is clearly relevant to the sentencing. The jury listened to the current evidence. They were not in any way influenced by the fact that the defendant's child abuse is longstanding. And it wasn't just abuse of Tammy Jernine. It was abuse of four of her then five children. The only one who has not been abused by Jerese Hunter is Jatea. Because at the time of the incidences in California, Jatea was only 8 months old. And so the defendant didn't do anything to her. But the state included in the sentencing memorandum photographs of the injuries inflicted on those children, down to Javonet, who was only 3 years old, that the defendant inflicted on her kids. Tammy Jernine, you saw her testify, and it's clear how this has affected her. But when she's 7 years old, those pictures of the injuries to her genitals, that was Tammy Jernine when she was seven. And that's what the defendant did to her. I also included the defendant's statement to the police at that time, where she acknowledged that she injured all of her children, claimed she didn't know any better, and that she would never do it again. Her then 14-year-old son, as the police reports indicate, told them that she had been abusing him 4 years. And in one of the counts in the indictment to which the defendant was convicted had to do with her, he would now be 22 years old, son, because she punched him in the face. She doesn't confine her abuse, obviously, to using an extension cord. Back when this happened in 2005 and 2006, the defendant finally admitted it, that she had inflicted these injuries on her kids. And there are, you can see from the pictures, Judge, there are scars on them. This is how she treats her children. But of course, the jury didn't know any of those things when they convicted her. She said, yes, I chased Tammy Jernine around the room naked, hitting her with the extension cord because she had stolen something at school. And she wouldn't stand still and allow me to continue. So I got my husband, George Shackley, oh yes, the convicted child molester, who was a registered sex offender that she takes into her house and marries. She had him hold her down while she hit her with the extension cord. So her family can say all they want, she's a good person, but the facts show otherwise, which is why the state wanted the court to have that information when you decide what should happen to her. She had a psychological evaluation in the prior California case, and all, according to the pre-sentence report, all that psychological showed was that she had situational stress disorder, period. So there was nothing mitigating back then. She also knew, at the time that this was going on, she was pregnant with Jesse. And in the pre-sentence report, it clearly states that Child Protective Services in California had every intention of taking Jesse away from her as soon as she was born. So what did the defendant do? She came to Arizona and had Jesse so the Child Protective Services would not be involved. And luckily for Jesse, it was Tycora, Lisa, and Mahogany who took her and cared for her and gave her the only joy that child ever had. Because then when the defendant gets out of prison, she comes back and takes Jesse away from the only family she ever knew. Mr. Johnson says, well, I was right there. You could have called me. Well, you know from the testimony during the trial that the defendant kept Jesse away from the people who loved her so that those people wouldn't see the abuse. That is exactly the situation that got the defendant into prison in the first place, is because she let her mother and the children's two aunts see the children in California. And when they saw the whip marks and the scars on the children, they're the ones who called the police. So of course, when the defendant comes here, she is going to isolate Jesse and Tammy Jernine because she doesn't want to go back to prison. It's her family that landed her in prison in the first place. She also does not have any place for Jesse to go. So she goes to domestic violence shelters and claims she's abused. Of course, there's no man in her life. Shockley's in prison in California, but she's going to do and say whatever she wants to take advantage of the system. So she, little Jesse, who's always lived in a home, is now suddenly living in domestic violence shelters. It wasn't until her family stepped forward and gave her money so she could get an apartment does she get the apartment in Glendale where the murder ultimately occurs.
Okay. If I have to hear interruptions, I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Jerice's father, Jesse Johnson, had to be removed from the court at this time. He was actually removed more than one time during the trial for laughing.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. So she continues with the same pattern she had in California. You saw from the police reports that the state submitted that in California, when she was going to discipline one of her children, she would take them in the bedroom and do it not in front of the other children and keep them separate. She continued to do that here in Arizona with Jesse. So Jesse didn't have a chance because she was now isolated in an apartment with the defendant. One of her relatives asked for leniency, and perhaps had the California judge not been so lenient, this never would have happened. Jesse would have been older. But there was leniency shown to her, even though she was convicted of not just abusing Tammy Jernine, but abusing her other four children, or three children. Even though in California they call it corporal punishment of a child, it is the equivalent to intentional or knowing child abuse in Arizona. And at that time, the probation officer noted that in reviewing the seriousness of the offense, as well as the likelihood of the defendant being successful in changing her behavior, it appears that a state prison recommendation is the most appropriate. The defendant's actions were egregious, and the likelihood of her making changes necessary to be a stable parent are slim. We're here because there were none. She continuously made choices that put her children at risk. The amount of damage done to these children is immeasurable. And now it is 1,000 times worse. because now she has taken the final step and killed their sister. She had the opportunity to make changes. She talks about going to parenting classes in California. She talks about being in programs in prison, and yet she comes out, returns here, and does the exact same thing. The state also included in the sentencing memorandum the part of her interview with Detective Leskey on the night where she claims Jesse went missing, where she talks to him about the California case. And of course, she minimizes it to the point that you would think the court should have apologized to her for sending her to prison. She claimed that 7-year-old Tammy Jernine, that she just whooped her because Tammy Jernine was burglarizing people's homes at 7 and stealing large amounts of money and jewelry, and she didn't want little Tammy Jernine to go down the wrong path and end up in prison, and so that's why she whooped her. The jury didn't hear that, of course, because we took all of that out. But she has always been blaming Tammy for what happens to her. She blamed Tammy for the fact that she went to prison, as opposed to taking responsibility for it. And then when Tammy has to come into this courtroom and finally tell what she knows, the blame is still on Tammy Jernine. Tammy is making it up, and so on and so on. And of course, the jury didn't know why Tammy is so damaged. But the court knows. She is so damaged because of living with a defendant who her family claims is a good person. The state is asking that you sentence the defendant to natural life in prison so that she never, ever has an opportunity to do this to anyone else, and because it is the appropriate punishment for what she did to Jesse. Additionally, the court has to sentence the defendant on the child abuse charge. The state is asking that you give her the maximum sentence of 24 years. There is nothing mitigating here. She wasn't a 21-year-old new mom who didn't know better. She was an ex-con who knew perfectly well how illegal and criminal her behavior was, whether she recognized the harm she was doing to her child or not. The jury found 4 aggravating factors. The cruel, especially cruel, heinous, or depraved nature of the offense, the fact that it was a domestic violence offense committed in the presence of children, the fact that Jesse was under 12 years old and the defendant was clearly over 18, and the fact that she perpetrated a fraud on the community by, after disposing of Jesse like so much garbage, she then reports her missing and gets the whole state involved in trying to find this little girl, all the while knowing that she has successfully disposed of her body. She should be shown no leniency at all. The state is asking for the aggravated sentence of 24 years, and pursuant to law, it must be consecutive to whatever sentence the court gives on the murder. Thank you.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older 2 kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores. customized to my family's needs. And then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
Jerise's attorney asked for leniency and cited abuse in Jerise's childhood. I don't think anybody has any sympathy for Jerise, but I think this is important to bring up because it helps us understand the cycle of abuse.
Judge Jerise is here today. She's 41 years old at this point, and she has been through an extraordinary couple of years. You've heard from her father, Jesse, today. Her mother, Shirley, has been in court previously. I know the court's aware of that. She is living in California, was unable to make it today due to some medical issues that she's having. Jerise was born the oldest of three girls that Shirley and Jesse had. And Jesse, unfortunately, was only in the house for the first couple years of Jerise's life. But we know from talking to different family members, aunts and uncles, that it was a very tumultuous atmosphere that Jerise grew up in. She unfortunately learned to parent the way she was raised inside of her home. And that was often in physical ways. And as she grew up, I think it's safe to say that the respites that she found from what was happening in her home in California were here in Arizona, when she was able to come for summers and to visit with her grandmother and her family members. And as you heard from testimony, they were actually close to cousins when they grew up and got to spend time together. Lisa still calls her Reese, the nickname that the kids had for Jerise. It was a close family, and I think those were the breaks that Jerise had from an otherwise difficult upbringing. There's no doubt that as she was raised, she was learning, frankly, at her mom's hand, of how to parent. Not in appropriate ways, but it's the way that she was taught. Jerise finally began to have her own children and did display behaviors in raising her children the only way that she knew. And often those ways were physical as well. She had charges in California that the court's aware of, and those resulted in the ways that she thought she was raising and disciplining her children. She was pregnant with Jesse and came to Arizona, had Jesse, and made accommodations for Jesse, made arrangements for Jesse, and wanted to be responsible for what she was going to do with the rest of her life.
Jerise then had her chance to beg for leniency. I will warn you, this may make you angry.
Honorable Judge Morales, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak before you, as I know that you are a very busy woman. I know I've been made out to be a horrible person and a monster of a mother, human being, and a member of society. I've been made out to be all these things. A terrible member of society, a horrible mother. I've even had to sit there and be called a baby killer today, which I most definitely am not, and I don't own that. But that is not who I am. I made a terrible mistake years ago in California. I've paid for that. I've grown and learned from that experience. I truly have. That is not who I am anymore. That is not the woman who stands before you today, Judge Morris. I think of my children constantly, especially my baby Jessie. I worry about where she is and whether she's safe and sound and what somebody's doing to her or if she's all right. I worry because I am her mother. I know I've been convicted of a horrible crime as I stand here before you. A crime which I most definitely did not commit. I beseech you, Judge Moraz, to bestow a lenient sentence upon me. I feel as though I've been judged, tried, and convicted already by the public through the media. I felt that way before I even had a trial, Judge Moraz. And I thank my family for supporting me. For supporting me through this horrific ordeal. To my children, Javion, Javani, Janine, Javione, Jatea, Jesse, and Therese, I love you. And I miss you. Life is not the same without you. I desperately long for you just as the deer longs for water. Each breath I take is filled with your air. Please don't ever forget that. You are the air that I breathe. I'm your mom. Nothing will ever change that. And until my last breath, I will fight for my children and for the return of Jesse, whether I'm behind bars or not. Again, I ask you for a lenient sentence, Judge Moraz, if you can find it in your heart, to look at the woman who stands before you today not as a monster, not as some horrible member of society, a person who abuses her children. I don't abuse my children. I made a bad mistake in California, but I did not make that mistake here. I wasn't abusing my children, Judge Moraz. With every ounce of my being, until I restore my family, I will work to get them back home with me where they belong, to restore my entire family. Although some people can stand up before you and say they don't consider me a member of their family anymore, well, I don't feel the same. I still love you, even if you hate me. I didn't do anything to Jesse. The state can't prove that I did anything to Jesse. However, I've been convicted of hurting her. And that's a horrible injustice. But I must follow the rules of this state. And if you sentence me to life, I pray that you will give me a chance to get out, to be with my children one day. I ask for a sentence that is not life, Judge Moraz, because I don't deserve that. Thank you for hearing me out, Judge.
Hearing her speak makes me so angry. Where were these tears before? Everything is about her. It isn't about Jesse or her other children that she abused. Next, we hear from the judge.
I have considered the facts and circumstances of your life as well as the life of how Jesse lived and how she died. I considered the fact that she was a helpless 5-year-old who really needed your protection. And instead, she died under your care. I understand that you say that you did not kill her, but the jury has decided otherwise. And I have sat through the entire trial, and I have to agree with the jury. There certainly was substantial evidence to show that you did kill her and that you did dump her like just yesterday's trash. And I can't forget that. Although your attorney says that during this one short period of your life, 1 year, you didn't do anything and you have learned from your lesson, testimony shows otherwise. I remember a portion of the testimony from your neighbor who said that Janine went to her and then you went to her and tried to blame things on Janine. And I remember the testimony from Ms. Vance about the picnic in which she said that there was some type of injury on Jesse. So that rings hollow to me. I've also considered the fact that you have done this before. Not that you should be judged forever for what you've done before, because you did pay your debt to society for those. But I also have to consider the fact that you are a repeat offender on the same type of charge. And I have to consider protecting any future children. I've also considered your life circumstances. And I don't doubt Ms. Shoemaker when she says that you've had a horrible beginning of your life and that you maybe learned your parenting from somebody else and that you did not have an easy life, that you yourself was probably abused as a child. And I have also noted that you do have the support of at least a portion of your family. Considering all of that, I do believe a natural life sentence is appropriate in this case. And so as to count two, it is the judgment and sentence of the court that you be sentenced to the Department of Corrections for the rest of your natural life. As to count one, I have considered the following aggravating circumstances. And those are the aggravating circumstances that the jury found. And those are you committed the offense in an especially heinous, cruel, or depraved manner, that the offense was a domestic violence offense committed in the presence of children, that you were an adult at the time of the crime and the victim was a child under the age of 12, and that you perpetrated a fraud on the community by reporting the victim as a missing child. I note especially that they spent hours and hours, days, weeks, months looking for Jesse. So it also rings hollow to me that nobody was out there looking for her. There were people looking for her. They spent a lot of time looking for her. And as for the mitigating circumstances, I note again that you do have the support of at least a part of your family, the fact that you did not have an easy upbringing, and that you were most likely abused as a child yourself. Balancing the aggravating circumstances against the mitigating circumstances, I do find that the aggravating circumstances are sufficiently substantial to warrant a greater than presumptive sentence as allowed under the law. And it is a judgment of the court that you be sentenced to the greater than presumptive sentence of 20 years and giving you credit for the 1,044 days of pre-sentence incarceration that you have already served. This sentence is a flat-time sentence as required under the law, and it is consecutive to count two as required under the law. And I should say, I have also considered the fact that I've already imposed a natural life sentence upon you in deciding not to give you the absolute maximum as recommended by the state.
For anyone who is not familiar with the difference between a life sentence and a natural life sentence, a life sentence gives someone the possibility of parole after serving a certain amount of years. A natural life sentence means that there is no possibility of parole. Jerice will die in prison unless she is able to win an appeal in the future. Covering this story was so hard for me, and I wondered what I could do to help people learn from this and possibly save another child someday. I asked my friend Brooke, who is a child therapist, to come on the show. I wanted to get some more information about the flaws in the system and also the signs of child abuse that we should all look for. The first thing that I asked Brooke about was Jesse's sister's testimony. What you didn't hear was that when she first went into the courtroom, she went and hugged her mother before testifying. I also asked her about her defending her mother on the stand, even though we know she abused her.
That is very common. I work with a lot of kids who have been removed from their home for whatever reason, and they love their parents. I mean, that's her mom. And even though her mom was abusive to her, especially if it sounds like she only knew abuse for such a long time, kids still love their parents, and they will lie and say they're not being abused because either they've been threatened or they're afraid of being taken away and put in a different situation that's worse, like they're afraid of the unknown. So kids will lie, but it's very rare that I've heard a child say, you know, I don't love my mom anymore, or I don't love my dad anymore, even though they were abusive to me.
One of the biggest flaws that Jesse's case exposed was the ability for people who are known abusers to move from one state to another, and the fact that state agencies do not communicate with each other. I asked Brooke to explain this a little bit more for us.
I know sometimes there's a disconnect because, you know, in each state regulates its own child welfare services. And so, like, I used to live in Illinois and they had DCFS, which was the Department of Children and Family Services. And now I live in Indiana and they have DCS, which is the Department of Children's Services. And I think it's very likely that someone could be involved in DCS in Indiana and then move to Illinois, which is an hour and a half away, and the state of Illinois would have no idea.
Everyone who has heard this story has been simply appalled by the fact that this was reported not only to Child Protective Services, but also to the police, and nothing was done.
It's so hard, though, when a child denies the abuse for a government agency to justify a further investigation. I know that, and this is not an excuse for them, but I know that at least here, the DCS workers have huge caseloads, you know, over 30 kids. And that's a lot if you think that you have to be responsible for the health and safety of 30 kids and court dates and visits and keeping track of everybody. But I know the process here. Like, when I make a call to DCS, because I'm a therapist, so I'm a mandated reporter. So if I suspect abuse, I have to make a call. And then what they do is they evaluate that report that I made and decide that if it's valid enough to be checked out, to be investigated. And sometimes I'll get a call back and they'll say, you know, we decided not to investigate it this time. Or sometimes I'll get a call back and they'll say, you know, we investigated it, but we've taken care of it. So they just like went in and basically talked to them or gave them a warning. But for the kids to deny it, I think it would be really hard for a DCS worker to justify further investigation. I think they would have checked them off the list as, oh, we checked them out and everything was okay.
I wondered, what could the police have done differently in this case that could have prevented this from happening?
The youth service people don't have the right to go into someone's house and check it out, but the police did. The police could have done a well-person check.
At Jerise's trial, Jesse's teacher testified that she did not see any signs of abuse.
That's really common. Or if the children don't want people to know that they're getting beat, they'll cover them or they'll have an excuse. One of the major signs of physical abuse is that they have a bruise or a welt that's shaped like something. So like if it's shaped like a spoon, or if it's shaped like a belt buckle, or if it's shaped like an extension cord, then, you know, that's a sign of physical abuse, because generally the bruises that kids get from the playground or, you know, roughhousing are just round spots.
This made me wonder what other physical signs of abuse are common.
Frequent broken bones. I mean, I know little boys are rough, but if they have frequent broken bones or bite marks, I mean, that's something you want to look into, because that doesn't happen a lot in a child's lifetime. Burns, especially burns that are shaped like things, or burns on like the palms of the hands, or burns that look like maybe cigarette burns, or basically anything that doesn't have a good explanation. So, you know, if I would see a child that has a black eye and I would say, oh, I noticed that, you know, it looks like you have a bruise on your eye, they might say, yeah, I was playing baseball and I got hit in the face with a ball. And that's a believable story. But if they say, you know, I ran into, you know, my desk, and or if they make up some elaborate story that doesn't seem to fit the situation, then that is a sign that they're covering for something. They're trying not to get someone in trouble. Or if they try to explain it before you ask, I mean, if they give you a unfitting explanation before you've inquired about it, it's like they're trying, they've already got their story in their head, and so they're trying to cover for it before you can like ask them about it, if that makes sense. When the kid says, you know, I didn't break the window, you know, before you realize that there's a broken window, it's kind of on the order of the same thing.
As many of you know, I am the mother of two young boys who, from time to time, will get an injury and I have to take them to the hospital. I remember taking my older son to the emergency room after he fell backwards off of a swing and broke his wrist. More than one person on the hospital staff came in and asked him exactly how he had done it. I knew they were asking those questions because they have to, because they're mandatory reporters of abuse. I asked Brooke to tell us more about this.
These physical signs aren't found at the hospital. You know, if a teacher would see him or a neighbor or just, you know, someone who, like if you see a child on a regular basis at a store, that's a more likely place to see it. Because if they take the child to the hospital, then they have to explain it away even more. So not taking an injured child to a hospital is also a sign of neglect and or abuse. And I always tell the parents that I work with, you know, be thankful that your healthcare providers care enough about your children to ask those questions. I mean, it does feel kind of insulting as a parent, you know, to be accused or feel like you're being accused of abuse, but at least you know that the healthcare providers on your team are trying to look out for the best interest of your children.
Here are some other signs to look out for if you are suspecting abuse.
Well, and a lot of times the signs of abuse or neglect aren't always physical. So if a child has a major personality change, if they're normally like outgoing and they become withdrawn or they suddenly become aggressive, especially with kids smaller than them, then that can be a sign. Or if they all of a sudden, if they're potty trained and they start like wetting their pants or wetting the bed, or if they start having eating issues, because those are things kids can control. So a kid can control when they eat, they can control when they go to the bathroom, but they can't control when an adult abuses them. So they will control the things that they can. Sometimes they'll be really clingy or they'll startle easy. If they're at a school activity or a function and they don't want to go home, they're not ready to go home when it's over, that could be a sign. I mean, they could just be having a lot of fun. It could also not be a sign, but I used to work at an agency where my boss told us, you know, when in doubt, make a report, because it's not your job or my job or anybody's job except for the Child Protective Agency in that state to do the investigation. So if you don't know, make a report, because they will investigate and see if there's something to it. Because it's better to make a report and no abuse be happening than abuse be happening, but you didn't make a report because you weren't sure. Because it's not your job to be sure, that you're just helping out.
One question that I had was, why would someone like Jerise Hunter, who viciously abused children, have 7 children?
Thing is that I don't think most parents want to be abusive or bad parents. I think it's a cycle that perpetuates. And so if a parent was abused, if a parent didn't have their own needs taken care of when they were a child, then they never learned how to do that. And so then the cycle continues with their children. And I think that, you know, I always hope that I'm stopping the cycle with the children that I'm working with, so their children aren't in that same kind of situation. But it's so sad because, you know, if these parents just knew, like if they just knew better ways to cope with their own things, or if they had their own treatment, the abuse might never start. And sometimes I have seen people think of children more as possessions. So she has all these children and she doesn't want them to be taken away because they're hers, but she doesn't want to deal with them either. And that's really hard.
I asked Brooke what some of the other flaws are in the system that allow for children like Jesse to slip through the cracks.
Yeah, in the cases that I work with, generally if children have been taken away from their parents, they have to take a parenting class. They have to get their own therapy. They have to get family therapy. And then in the end, a judge decides the fate of this family, these kids. And I think judges are probably great. I don't know any personally, but I don't think the judge always looks at the entire picture. I think that sometimes kids get put back with families that aren't ready to have them back yet, or they don't terminate parental rights because the bias is with the family unit, even when it doesn't feel like the best situation. The judge doesn't always listen to the experts or the people who have been around the children's opinion. They make their own opinion. It's so hard because the problem is so big. And like I said, it's just this cycle. And, you know, this woman you said had 7 kids. And so the environment that these 7 kids grew up in and learned how to be a parent in, what's going to happen with their children? And it's just a huge problem with mental health and behavioral health and the system's ability to deal with that and to take care of it. It's tragic.
Brooke actually has her own podcast, and I will let her describe that for you, and I will be putting the link in the show notes.
On May 1st, the first episode of the new show that I've been working on, it's called Actual Innocence, is going to be released. It's telling the story of people who have been incarcerated and then exonerated. The very first episode is actually the very first person who was declared innocent. So, like, the difference between not guilty and innocent is not guilty means that there wasn't enough evidence to convict you, and innocent means there never was any evidence to convict you. It's called Actual Innocence, and you can already find it on iTunes. You just have to search for Actual Innocence and subscribe, because there's a preview episode.
Jesse has shown us that our system is broken, and we need to make an effort to improve the system for children like Jesse so this does not happen again. Please share Jesse's story with your family and friends. I think that together we can possibly make a difference. If you suspect child abuse, please call and report it to the National Child Abuse Hotline at 1-800-4-A-CHILD. That brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks everyone for listening. If you would like to reach out to me with your thoughts, theories, or suggestions, I can be reached in several places. You can email me at thevanishedpodcast@gmail.com. I am on Twitter at @thevanishedpod. There is a Facebook page called The Vanished Podcast and a closed group called The Vanished Podcast Discussion Group. It is closed so that your comments are private. I also have a call-in line now, which you are free to call and leave messages. The number is 814-VANISH-9. You can also text that number as well. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes or wherever you listen, if that option is available. That helps more listeners find the show and spreads the word about these cases.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.